Welcome to the statewide conversation with Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. She'll be joining us in just a moment. It is your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during this COVID-19 pandemic. If you didn't get a chance to send in your questions this week, you can email covid@ampers.org or you can call 612-562-9888. To find past conversations, go to kaxe.org. We've also been talking with other officials around the state of Minnesota. I'm Heidi Holton, live from KAXE studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. We want to thank you for tuning in today. We're teaming up with community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. We're bringing you COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. You get the opportunity as well to ask questions of our elected officials. Lieutenant Governor of Minnesota, Peggy Flanagan, joins us now. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Heidi. Thanks so much for having me again.
You're welcome. And I can hear some of the stuff going on in your house. I want to ask again, I think I always do, how the distance learning is going again.
It is going okay. I think, you know, we haven't been able to talk for a couple weeks, and I can tell you that my daughter is logging on more proactively by herself, and that's good. And she's also started to learn German on my iPad. So well, I don't know what's happening, but we're doing okay. But it's good for now.
Oh, good. Now, if you follow Lieutenant Governor's Facebook page, there was a wonderful photo of your daughter and of your cat. I've never seen such a good cat photo as during her show and tell. So I appreciated that. Thanks for posting.
Thank you. She, that is what many of her Google meetings with her classmates have turned out to be. Is showing off our senior pet. Yogi, our cat, is 20 years old and a very, very patient old man.
Well, I want to get into some of the questions that we heard this week that people wanted to pose to you. But first, I want to play a little bit from Minnesota Native News, where reporter Melissa Townsend spoke with U.S. Senator Tina Smith from Minnesota. She sits on the Senate's Committee on Indian Affairs. We're going to listen to the clip, and I'll ask you to comment on it. It's about federal relief dollars going to tribal governments.
I read that the initial 60% is being released based on population count and then 40 on tribal employees. What do you think about that calculation? I mean, tribes are historically underreported in terms of the census.
Yes, this is a big issue. The challenge, of course, is that they're also withholding this other chunk of money, which they need to distribute. And there is this case looming over the distribution of funds that needs to be resolved regarding whether or not Alaska Native corporations are eligible for any of these funds, which I do not believe that that was the intent of Congress for them to be eligible. And then the other thing, of course, that we need to agree to is that, how could I put this? The Treasury Department is saying these dollars can only be used to reimburse for COVID-related expenses when tribal governments are seeing such devastating impacts because of loss of revenue. So that's another issue that we continue to go over with the Treasury Department.
That's Minnesota Senator Tina Smith. Any thoughts on that?
So I really appreciate Melissa's question, and it's always good to hear from my friend, Senator Smith. We've been working very closely with Senator Smith, also with Congresswoman McCollum, on this response. They are both champions for our tribes in Minnesota. And I agree with the senator. Our tribes are desperately in need of relief, both in direct response to this pandemic, but also due to the loss of revenue that is directly caused by this pandemic. Tribal nations don't have a tax base, so many rely on gaming operations and hospitality for the majority of their revenue and are really critical to the economy, especially in greater Minnesota. And all of Minnesota's tribes made the incredibly difficult decision to close casinos to protect the health and well-being of their employees, but also of Minnesotans, both Native and non-Native people. So the loss of revenue is really tied to the pandemic. But on top of this is the fact that Native people are more vulnerable to COVID-19 because of historical health and economic disparities, underlying conditions, and unemployment, homelessness in both our reservation and urban population. So there's been a major delay in this funding. It is finally being distributed, although some of the money, as the senator said, is still being, you know, withheld. But the original proposal of the $8 billion was $20 billion. And so I think too often the 574 Native nations within the borders of the United States are invisible to decision makers and the urban populations as well. And so we've tried to work in partnership with the tribes in a state response to help to, you know, to be aligned, share resources, and figure out, you know, how we don't exacerbate the disparities that already exist. With the census count, I mean, that is happening right now. So if you're Indigenous and you haven't filled out your census form, now is the time. And if you are non-Native, you should also fill out your census form. But the majority of, I think it's important to point out that American Indian people overall have been historically underreported in the census. Since the majority live outside of reservations, according to the last census, it's really vitally important for all Native people to fill that out and to participate. We made a big deal of it when the form came to our house because, you know, Native people deserve to be seen, heard, valued, and counted. And this is one of the ways that, as we look at the disparities of this pandemic, that we can, you know, that we can respond.
And it's also a good reminder. So everyone should be signing up for the census so we get accurate numbers. And also people like Senator Tina Smith, you mentioned Betty McCollum, yourself, our elected officials want to hear from people. So if these things matter to you, you can contact them, you can email them, you can call their offices. And I want to remind people to get involved. That's what you are there for. Is that right?
That is 100% correct.
Okay.
Especially right now, I think, as we can't come together face to face. Those phone calls, those emails, any kind of outreach becomes that more important. And a census is another way, right, that we also have representation in Washington and determines how many congressional seats we have as well. So it's critically important. So fill it out.
Yeah. We had a call from Shelby in Minneapolis. Let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is Shelby. I'm a medical student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I currently live in Minneapolis. So my question is, from a policy standpoint, what are state leaders doing to address and combat the significant racial disparities that we're seeing in COVID-19 cases among people of color in Minnesota?
Lieutenant Governor?
Sure. I really appreciate this question. And Shelby, I'm glad to hear that you're a medical student. It's super important to have healthcare providers who approach their work through the lens of equity, you know, certainly now, but also into the future. We know that people of color and Native folks are particularly vulnerable during this pandemic because of longstanding health and economic disparities that I mentioned earlier that stem from, you know, inherently racist systems and racist policies. And so that's why we formed the Community Resiliency and Recovery Workgroup under the leadership of Minnesota Department of Human Rights Commissioner Rebecca Lucero. And I am also deeply involved in that work of that work group to begin to do a deep dive on the disaggregation of data so that we can be super transparent and tell the true story of what is happening in communities of color so that we can target our resources strategically, but also ensure that that communities of color and Native folks are not being lost in the shuffle. That as we begin to reopen, we're not forgetting about the folks who are most dramatically impacted. Actually, today we're going to be doing a deeper dive into the work on a 2 p.m. press call today with the governor and with the Department of Health. And so our major focus is on implementing near and long-term strategies to support resiliency and recovery in communities of color, doing this with over 100 leaders from organizations led by and for people of color. So we're monitoring this data, we're sharing it, we're breaking it down as best we can, we're advising healthcare facilities across the state to ask for this disaggregated data and to have a common language so that people can be counted. Because right now there's a large percentage of people who are being labeled as other. I may be labeled as other. Commissioner Lucero has talked about that she also may be labeled as other. And so it's just really critical that we do this in the right way. So this is the response that we are standing up. This work is just beginning, but we know centering people of color and Indigenous folks as we move towards recovery is going to be the way that we get back to better and not just get back to normal.
So when you say disaggregating the data, that means counting people as individuals and being transparent about numbers? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's right. So we can share some percentages, but it's important too that we share those individual numbers. But also as we look at, you know, we're breaking down like the number of Black folks who have been diagnosed with COVID, that we're disaggregating that even more so that we can look if it's Oromo, is it Somali, is it African immigrants, and making sure as we talk about like Asian Pacific Islanders, is that Hmong, is that Korean, that we're starting, you know, we're asking for that real clarity so that we can be targeted in our response. This is, I think, new in the last couple of years to the state of Minnesota in general, disaggregating this data and diving down even more. But we want to make sure that in this response, we're being incredibly intentional about it. The data, you know, you measure what you value. And so by having accurate data, we can respond appropriately.
That's Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. You're listening to a statewide conversation. Our next question came through email. Since we have not peaked, are we looking to other places that have already peaked to see what they did? Are we looking at Sweden or Iceland? When our testing capacity is maximized, can we expect our state's plan to be quite different than it has been?
So we've examined case studies from around the world, from Sweden and Iceland to Singapore and South Korea. And as much as we've learned from these other countries, we're still working on growing our testing capacity to match theirs. Without a comprehensive federal strategy or a changing federal strategy, what's happened in these countries is difficult to replicate given our lack of supplies. But once we've maximized our testing capacity, you'll be able to see that we can offer tests to a wider range of Minnesotans. Just a month ago, we were still only able to offer tests to hospitalized patients or people with severe co-occurring illnesses like kidney failure, healthcare workers and first responders, and childcare providers. But now we're able to recommend that all symptomatic Minnesotans be tested, and we imagine that we'll be able to further expand that criteria to maximize our capacity and also know that it's testing and it's also tracing, which is really critical to our response. So, you know, the governor put out a call for a moonshot. We are on our way there. And I just also wanted to refer folks to know that we have, we also have on our website, what's available is that you can look at a map and you can see the closest testing site to you all across the state of Minnesota. So we are advising folks to go there first if they are symptomatic and then can find a place to get a test.
Okay. We had another question on social media having to do with testing. The question's about hotspots and how they're being addressed and monitored. They heard about plans for dealing with nursing homes, which I think is needed. They said, do we have enough supplies to do this? Also, should we expect more hotspots as testing ramps up? Or are they specific to areas like meatpacking and nursing homes?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. We know that seniors and people with underlying medical conditions are particularly vulnerable to the impacts of the virus, and that means that we have to do everything we can to focus on our long-term care facilities to prevent and mitigate outbreaks. And you, if you tuned in yesterday, you saw that the governor and Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm laid that out yesterday. At the same time, you know, Minnesota and places across the country are still dealing with a shortage of many of the critical care supplies and personal protective equipment, or PPE, that we need to keep staff and residents safe. So we have a working group dedicated to tracking down and purchasing supplies that we need, and they continue to work around the clock. We're constantly chasing down leads and working to ensure consistent inventory. So, and make use of novel solutions like 3D printing swabs to collect test samples. And that's been an exciting development for us. Yesterday, we announced the 5-point battle plan to protect our most vulnerable, that represents our plan to combat the virus in these long-term care facilities. And as part of that plan, we are prioritizing getting facilities the protective equipment that they need. So this includes maintaining a state supply of masks and other PPE equipment for emergency use when a facility exhausts its supplies and is unable to restock, and pushing out needed equipment for facilities facing outbreaks and making it available to other facilities when we can. And as for hotspots, we know that as we ramp up testing to the questioner's point, we're going to find more cases. And we believe that there are cases in far more communities around the state than we have confirmed, because we simply have not had the adequate testing capacity. So as we begin to gather more data and are working on our plan right now to ramp up contact tracing so we can track and isolate those cases to prevent further spread wherever the virus goes. But that testing and tracing are the really important tools in our toolbox to be able to respond to those hotspots and then be able to get their resources out quickly to those facilities and communities who need them, as we can assume that the virus will likely move from community to community.
Yeah, coming up, we'll have another question about masks for people. But I just wanted to ask, because I think I've been hearing from people in the community or from social media, when those hotspots come up, like I'm looking at the Department of Health website right now, and today the number of deaths in Minnesota is 534. 434 of those were in long-term care assisted living facilities. I think it's easy for people to think that they don't have any connection to a long-term care facility or a meatpacking plant, and so this doesn't affect them. What would you say to that?
I would say it certainly affects all of us. You know, one, just that people who work in these facilities are members of our community. I think, you know, as we see in Stearns County and in Nobles County, that when there are a handful of cases, they can increase dramatically. And part of the reason is because there are people who may be asymptomatic and, you know, continue to go about their day and are infecting people and don't even know it. So I think it can be why COVID-19 is so tricky is that we can't always, you know, my daughter often asks, you know, from a seven-year-old's perspective, she's like, can you see it? Like, because it's this thing that we're fighting. And I'm like, no, you can't see it. And that's why we have to, you know, be really diligent about it. And I would just say the same thing to Minnesotans all across the state, that it is likely already in your community and you don't know it. And so we have to just act as if, with wearing our, you know, limiting travel, wearing masks when we are out in community, doing everything we can to wash our hands and protect one another, because it's likely already where you live.
Yeah. Well, let's get to this question from Melissa.
Hi, my name is Melissa. I'm from Coon Rapids, Minnesota. And my question is about the availability of N95 masks to folks with underlying health conditions. If those of us that do have underlying health conditions, if we had the ability to have N95s available to us, we could simply protect ourselves as opposed to being forced to rely on the compliance and compassion of others, because the longer this goes and the more angry people get, the less people are willing to comply. Thank you so much for taking my question.
Your thoughts for Melissa?
Yeah, Melissa, thanks for sharing your story. We know a lot of folks with underlying health conditions are more vulnerable to severe and oftentimes life-threatening symptoms of COVID-19, and this is really scary for many of our friends and neighbors. I will say that I have not seen my own mom in 2 months, which is a very rare occurrence in our lives, as we oftentimes see each other once a week. And so it's one of the ways that we're protecting each other, but it's really hard. And you're exactly right to identify the difference between N95 masks and the surgical style of masks that can be made out of fabric. The N95 masks, just so folks know, can offer more protection to the wearer, but the surgical and homemade masks protect others. So we're dealing with the shortage of N95 masks under the leadership of Commissioner Alice Roberts Davis. We've managed to procure more than we had 2 months ago, but we're still limited on where those supplies can go. We're prioritizing right now healthcare providers and long-term care facilities and distributing N95s. And where we know COVID-19 can is happening right now. But we're strongly urging Minnesotans to wear surgical masks or homemade masks or face coverings while in public. My mask protects you and your mask protects me. These masks are not perfect, which is why it's still important, of course, to stay 6 feet away from people outside of your household and wash your hands frequently. I just also just hope, though, that stories like Melissa's remind folks why it's so important to take these precautions, even if we ourselves do not have underlying conditions. There are people in community who are vulnerable, and the least we can do is protect them as best we can. And as Minnesotans, I think that's what we do. We take care of each other. And so that's just my call. Like when you're out and you're about, wear your mask, wash your hands, protect each other, protect our neighbors like Melissa, our neighbors like my mom, and folks across the state.
Yeah. We had another email. Lieutenant Governor, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what do you see happening over the next few weeks as far as our state opening up? What are the main things that Governor Walz and you are considering, and what are you most worried about? They want to know what keeps you up at night, but they hope that you're getting sleep.
Well, I appreciate that. I think, we find ourselves in a time where if it would be easier to endure if we knew when the particular end date would be. But unfortunately, we don't. I don't have a crystal ball, but I can tell you, my number one priority and the governor's number one priority has been to keep Minnesotans safe. Through the shelter in place and the closure of non-essential businesses, Minnesota has been able to slow the spread and build our healthcare capacity, which has been the purpose of asking people to stay at home. At the end of April, we extended the shelter in place and closure of non-essential businesses until May 18th. But at the same time, we've begun to reopen parts of our economy where we think we can do so safely. For example, now retail businesses can do curbside pickup. The governor and I are working really closely with experts at our agencies and using data to track the course of the spread in Minnesota and determine when it's safe to reopen different parts of our economy and society. And I'm sure many of you have seen the examples that we have of turning up the dial as we are able to expand and loosen some of the distancing practices. But at this point, I can't tell you the exact timing on next steps. But we recognize that these measures have taken a real toll on businesses and people in Minnesota. So we're going to continue to monitor and evaluate to determine where and when we can make adjustments. But the things that keep me up at night, are really grounded in the folks who too often have been invisible before the pandemic and are invisible now. And I would say that those are community members who are experiencing homelessness, our community members who may currently be incarcerated, and folks who may have been in crisis before this crisis even hit. Those are the folks who are being hit the hardest, and that is where I am focusing most of my time and energy, because that is absolutely what keeps me up at night, but it is also what fuels the fire in my belly to do the work.
All right. Before we go, a couple of questions about gatherings. We heard from Donette from Grand Rapids, and she asked about art fairs. She said individual artists have lost one of their big sources of income for the art fair summer schedule. So she wanted to know about that. And we also had someone who asked about Governor Walz mentioning that how people can have parties and family gatherings to celebrate things like graduations, that he's going to start looking into that. So I wonder if you'd address gatherings.
Sure. So to Donette, thanks for the question. And as this pandemic has progressed, we see more and more that so many different parts of the economy are being impacted. And for artists, this is no different. And it's really important that artists don't get lost in this conversation, because I think for many of us, we are turning directly to art as a way to comfort ourselves, to express ourselves during this moment. So first, I would encourage everyone to go to UIMN.org to see if you qualify for unemployment insurance. With the Federal CARES Act, there's a benefit expansion for recipients in a new program, Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, or PUA, that covers people who don't qualify for traditional unemployment insurance. Whether you qualify or not will depend on your individual circumstances, but if you have a reduction of work hours due to the pandemic, and you may and you should go online to see if you're eligible. Second, as the legislative session comes to an end this month, I know that a major focus will be on looking to additional ways to support those who are impacted by COVID-19. So I will be sure to keep the impact of the arts community in my mind as we work to provide this long-term support to individuals in Minnesota. And yes, gatherings in general. I think this has been one of the most difficult things for folks. Graduations, in particular graduation parties, are a rite of passage for many people and an important transition for students and their families. But I'd say what's most important is how we can safely observe and honor the occasion in alignment with public health guidance to prevent the spread of COVID-19 in the community. The safest way to observe graduation or commencement is for everyone to stay home. The Department of Health and Education have issued guidance that indoor graduations and ceremonies held outside in stadiums and football fields are not permitted. When it comes to informal affairs, the social dial hasn't reached the point yet for large gatherings, so those shouldn't happen either. We'll continue to issue guidance on smaller gatherings, but right now we would just say, if you can gather via Zoom or Google Meeting, call each other. We have many drive-by birthday celebrations in our community, but we're going to have to remain really vigilant in preventing community spread, even during these joyous times that are meant to be celebrated. I can't imagine, having a joyous celebration and then knowing that because of that celebration, someone close to you became ill or was put at risk. So look for alternative ways to celebrate now and put that party on hold until we can all come together safely.
It's Minnesota's Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan. Your time is appreciated. Thanks for all your hard work on behalf of Minnesotans.
Heidi, thank you so much for this opportunity, and thank you for keeping folks informed all across the state. We appreciate you very much.
You're welcome. This has been a collaboration broadcast of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. You can listen to the full conversation, kaxe.org. If you would like to ask a question of the lieutenant governor or a state official, email covid@ampers.org or call 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KEXE, KBXE. Thanks for listening.